Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we tend to cover the stories that the corporate media doesn't cover, and we try to navigate through all of the propaganda and to try to bring you the truth.
Or covers dishonestly, as in the case of the first story we're going to get to today. Yes, I'm Natalie Morris, and today one of the stories we want to tell you about is how the WHO says that there is no cause for concern for cell phone radiation and cancer. The science is in. They've done it. They say 5G is not hazardous to your health. Well, that's not what one town in Massachusetts has to say, and the media is covering this incredibly dishonestly.
We're also going to talk, we're kicking off 9/11 week here on Redacted, so we want to say that right out of the gate. This is a big week for us here. We're going to be covering the 9/11 story from every angle, from the building demolitions to the hijackers, the alleged hijackers, to the failure of the defense system. So today we're going to be kicking off our big 9/11 coverage all week long here, and we want you to stick around at the end of today's show, because right when the show is done, especially on YouTube, it'll redirect you to our live premiere of our in-depth interview with Captain Dan Hanley, specifically on the hijacker question and whether or not those planes were remotely controlled. So we're going to be covering that on the show today as well.
Plus, what is your story about Venezuela? You want to talk about that?
Well, yes, we're going to also talk about America becoming turning into Venezuela under Kamala Harris's new socialist policies. We're going to draw some distinctions and connections between Venezuela and the United States.
Plus, in Germany, what the media calls right-wing party had a decisive victory, and then all of a sudden they didn't. What happened there? They're being called right-wing, but really they're more centrist. They just want slowed-down immigration and law instead of lawlessness. Is that right-wing? We're going to talk to Ralph Schulheimer about that.
All right. We're going to get to all of that and more. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Bunker Life, because Bunker is an affordable all-in-one app that protects you against identity theft, cybercrime, and surveillance. In fact, the last couple of months, there have been two major breaches that probably affected you. There was the breach at AT&T, which exposed all text messages, call logs of every AT&T customer. You might have also heard about the U.S. citizen social security numbers being compromised from the National Public Data breach. And that's where Bunker comes in, because Bunker includes patented pending, secure messaging, easy to use password management, secure cloud storage. I mean, why pay for several different applications when you can protect yourself with Bunker for just $12 annually? Bunker is owned and operated by security professionals with a long history of protecting the American public against cyber criminals and surveillance. There's never been a more important time than right now to protect yourself and the people you care about. So for a limited time, Bunker is offering a 1-year free trial for you. 1-year free trial. All your friends and all your family. Go right now today and sign up. Just go to bunker.life today and use that code redacted. When you use that code, you will get that first year for free. And all of your friends and family should go and try it right now. Bunker.life and use the code redacted when you sign up using the application.
Well, does 5G cause cancer? The World Health Organization says no. Not it at all. We've done a study. We're sure of it. The science is in. Now watch how sure they are, this propaganda that they're giving us. But a town in Massachusetts is suing the FCC because they say a cell phone tower in their neighborhood is making them sick. They lost their case, and we're going to talk about both of these things. So this headline caught my eye over the weekend because, of course, we all have cell phones. We want to believe that it's harmless to our health. The headline, mobile phones not linked to brain cancer, biggest study ever finds. Well, Let's talk about how big this study is. They made it seem like, yes, cell phones are safe. We know this. It's a done deal. Well, see the confidence with which The Guardian is reporting this. It says they found no overall association between mobile phone use and cancer, no association with prolonged use, no association with the amount of mobile phone use. This scientist says, I'm quite confident in our conclusions. We're done here. Now, whenever a doctor or a scientist is that confident, my spidey sense goes off, because scientists should acknowledge their limitations and say, well, there's room for progress. This is what the studies show. This sort of like, this is it, done, look away,
right,
is what makes me very nervous. So let's look at the study for ourselves, shall we? Now, first of all, we notice where it came from. The Australian government, low on my list of trustworthy entities, paid for by the WHO, which I could say is last on my list of entities I trust. I trust the IRS more than the WHO.
Whoa.
If I'm really like making a list of who's at the bottom, I trust the least, it's tie. The CDC, the HRC, the FDA, WHO, yeah, they're getting an F in my book of trustworthiness, but okay. Let's focus, though, on the Australian government entity that did this study. They're called the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency. That sounds to me like an agency that's pretty motivated to conclude that radiation is safe, but let's see how they came to this rock-solid conclusion. Here's what they did. They took 5,000 studies published between 1994 and 2022. None of those were long-term studies. Their time block with which they were choosing studies was long-term. You see the difference there? It's not like they took people and studied them from 1994 to 2022. It's that's the time with which they were choosing studies to qualify. They say that they took 5,000 studies between those years, but they only included 63 in their final analysis. So I'm so confused why they would even tell us that there are 5,000 studies when they're only going to connect with 63.
They choose the best 63.
And then, well, yes, yeah. The selection bias is obvious there, but look at what they say here. They're saying, again, out of 5,000 studies, they're only studying 1.26%. of all studies about cell phones and brain cancer. In other words, they just weeded out almost 99% of all research on the matter. They took the ones they wanted to, and they concluded that cell phone radiation is safe. I would say if that's a methodology that you present to a professor in an academic setting, you're gonna get an F on it. But they think this is fine. This is as good as any science we got on COVID, so I guess it's on brand for how sloppy the WHO is in their studies. Here's a list of studies that were presumably excluded. This list is hosted by the Children's Defense Fund, which is the organization that's associated with RFK Jr. As you can see, there are copious amounts of studies that show an association between tumors and cancer and radiation exposure, but the WHO is choosy not to look at these. Now, the list is so long that I had to run through them in this screen grab, but you can pause any of them.
I know. I'm looking here. I see cancer. I see nervous system problems. I see brain tumor, acoustic neuro. I'm seeing all sorts of red flags just scrolling with my eyes.
And if you keep looking, the WHO even has their own research on this, which they chose to exclude.
Sperm problems.
Right. But they're saying, okay, no, but we chose studies that show that there's no association. 63 of them, in fact, out of all 5,000.
Go ahead. I was going to say, because you're looking at those studies, but those weren't included in the conclusion because they didn't support the conclusion. That's how science works. You get rid of all the data that does not support your conclusion. Bam. That's
and right. Make your conclusion.
This is the new science. This is the new science.
No, it's not science. It's shit science. And The Guardian just went for it. Now, here's something else that the media is not telling us when they are presenting this study, is that the WHO study only addresses 1G and 2G. Who's using that any longer? And they acknowledge that 5G and 4G that we have now has higher radiation rates. So how can we apply this to current real world data? We cannot. Here they're saying it's worth noting that we only studied 1G and 2G users. And so there's a limitation with the current exposure that we have right now. So can we apply these results to 5G networks? We cannot.
1G? Who's using 1G?
Media.
2007?
And yet, the Guardian article that I showed you and any other mainstream article is saying, look, they studied this. We know there's no association between cancer and mobile phones networks. We know it. Based on 1G and 2G. And 1% of the available studies out there. That's how we know this. So, okay, they're safe. Well, that's not what this town in Massachusetts is alleging. This town says that a Verizon tower went up in 2020, and they all started to get sick and have been getting sick ever since. So they sued to get the tower removed. The judge here did not rule that they're not getting sick. What he ruled is that he doesn't have the authority to get the tower removed because that authority lies with the FCC. The FCC, however, has no method for taking these complaints. In fact, they put up towers whenever and wherever they want, even though a court of appeals in 2021 told the FCC that it needed to provide a better explanation for why its current limits for radiation, which were set in 1996, adequately protect adults and children and the environment from harm. And they have not, and they will not. They're allowed to just ignore this. So a judge has asked the FCC, how do you decide what towers go up where? How do you decide what is a safe radiation limit for these towns and cities? And they can ignore it. They're allowed to, and they won't. And so these residents say, well, we can't go to the FCC. The FCC is ignoring us, and they won't take this tower down. So what these residents say, I mean, it's too late for them is what they're saying. They're getting sick, and it's there. But they say that if a tower like this is even proposed in your area, you better fight like hell, because once it's up, there is no recourse for getting it taken down. The courts are saying it's out of our hands, and the FCC is saying F you. So they can't do anything. Here's what Miriam Enkelfels Garcia, the director of the Children's Health Defense that was litigating this, said. As soon as they're proposed, she says, during the permitting process, when there's still political power to push back, you fight. You show up to the town hall and you scream like mad, because once the tower is up, getting relief is almost impossible. She says, while the CHD will keep fighting on behalf of individuals and communities, we need to increase the political power pressure and advocate for legislative change. So am I saying that that 5G and these cell phone radiation towers and these cell phone networks and your phone itself causes cancer? I'm not. What I'm saying is there is a lot of research that points to that association, and now we have a totally shit WHO study with the worst science I've ever seen saying that it doesn't. So why would the WHO fund research to lead to this sloppy and clearly preordained conclusion? I leave that to you.
This is what they want.
Clayton.
This is exactly what they want.
We have a joke in our house that, like, I'll present this about globalists, and Clayton will go,
this is what they want.
And I'm like, who's they?
Well, you have Bill Gates, the largest funder of the World Health Organization, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, funding the WHO and doing these studies and selectively leaving out all of these other studies that point to cancer and tumors. Of course, they, you know, anyway, we can go down this rabbit hole.
Well, there are clearly some people who want you to believe that there is no association and the science is in based on networks we no longer have employed. Okay, why? Right? So It's a big question. I opted not to answer that. I'm just going to leave it there. What I'm telling you right now is that this is terrible science. It does not prove anything. It disproves, it ignores a lot of damning research. Why? Right? And that our government is making it such that they will not fix it.
Well, you guys let us know in the comments what you guys think about this. Today is our 9/11 special programming day here. We're going to be having a big interview here on the truth of the 9/11 attacks coming up in just a little bit here on the show. Plus, we're launching a big premiere on a deep dive interview on the hijackings themselves. We'll talk about that. So we've got two big stories coming up towards the end of today's show and a big premiere there. We're also going to talk about America turning into a socialist garbage dump thanks to the socialist policies that are being foisted right now by the Biden administration. administration. And the Harris administration, of course, wants to continue that. We're going to talk about that. But first...
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing, because mortgage interest rates look like they're about to drop below 5 even now in some places. So if you've been waiting to figure out how to get your finances in order, now is a good time to call our friends at American Financing, because a lot of us are carrying this bad debt. Well, what's bad debt is high interest credit card balances that charge 20% or more. Well, you can change that out for good debt. It's just like getting rid of those. American Financing has salary-based mortgage consultants that are helping homeowners just like you tap into their home's equity. Basically, you're leveraging your assets. This is something wealthy people are very comfortable with doing. The powers that be do not want regular people to be comfortable with that. They want to tell you, oh no, don't touch that equity. Oh no, don't learn this. Oh, you need to be a slave to your liabilities. No, you need to be a slave to your assets. You need to have your money working for you, and they can teach you this. So call them at 866-890-8434 or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Again, that's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. They're saving their customers an average of $800 a month. So try to learn this and see if it works for your family. That's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Well, Democrats seem hell-bent on driving the United States government right into a socialist garbage dump. Over the past few hours, the Kamala Harris campaign has hired socialists from Europe, yes, the European Union, to help with her socialist policies. You can't make this stuff up. Add that to the list of communist plans she already has in place, like price controls and free housing for illegal immigrants, state-run housing as well. Where do you hear all of this? Maybe the Soviet Union or perhaps Venezuela? And our next guest has a message for America. Your country is descending into a socialist nightmare. He should know. He grew up in Venezuela, moved to Miami to get away from socialism, and now he's battling the United States government, suing the FDA over their socialist policies. Joining me now is friend of the show, Antonio Colmenares. He's the CEO of Black Forest Supplements, and he's joining us today from Miami. We are in a socialist country under siege, Antonio. Great to see you. Welcome to the show.
Clayton, pleasure to be here on the show. Love the show. And yes, unfortunately, I feel that the Harris campaign, just as you mentioned, might turn this beautiful country into a socialist nightmare.
Well, you've been watching it unfold. I mean, let's just talk about the price controls, and let's talk about what you're seeing from Kamala Harris, something straight out of Venezuela. For our audience that might not understand what just unfolded in Venezuela over the past few months, maybe you can set a stage for us and help us understand that, and then try to connect the dots to what you're seeing now with the messages coming out of the Democratic platform for Kamala Harris.
Of course, Clayton, what happened in Venezuela around a month ago was that the Maduro regime basically self-proclaimed Maduro president. Obviously, we live under a dictatorship in Venezuela. And what they did was they control all the government agencies and the CNE, which is the agency that is in charge of the voting results, just made up some numbers. But the opposition leader, Maria Corina Machado, actually had her followers stay right outside the voting polls until the end, ask for the actual results, and then she uploaded all the results from 82% of the voting polls onto a website, which clearly showed that Edmundo Gonzalez, the opposition leader, won by a landslide of 70%. So this was going on right around the same time that Kamala Harris self-proclaimed herself the Democratic nominee without actual primary. So I was actually in Venezuela exercising my right to vote, and I could see the similarities between what was going on there and what happened quite literally in 2 days with the Harris campaign.
Wow. That's unbelievable. Literally the total. Yeah, no votes at all. No votes at all. And the Democrats basically... Democratic power elites, the sort of the globalist power elites, just chose a candidate without any voting at all. You even had in the United States, Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter movement, posting publicly on Twitter and elsewhere that they were furious, that they have, you know, they lost lives. People died fighting for their right to vote. Black Lives Matter saying that this is an affront to democracy. This is socialism. You're picking our candidate. We have no right to vote on this person.
No, it's incredible, Clayton. And I feel like all socialists really follow the same agenda. At first, they take away the nuclear family, separate you from your family. Then they try to weaken the population, whether they take away your guns or they take away your food. Then they censor opposing views, as we've seen Mark Zuckerberg, what he just said, happened with Meta. And then they try to nationalize all private industries that are well-to-do. The reason that I moved to Miami was because when I was 13, they nationalized my father's company. We had to flee. He got an investor's visa, and we came here to the U.S. legally. And that's when I fell in love with capitalism. Everything worked so well. There's opportunities for everyone. I really believe in the American dream. And I'm afraid that if we keep going down this rabbit hole, that might not be there any longer.
What has happened to Venezuela? I mean, on our show, we've been covering the Venezuelan gangs, the prison gangs, which have been let out of prisons in Venezuela. Many of them are now in the United States illegally and taking over apartment complexes in Aurora, Colorado, and others. Of course, we've reported on Chilean gangs, et cetera. But I want to focus specifically on Venezuela. What happened? Because it didn't take very long. It wasn't very many years. This is, I think, the warning I want for Americans to understand. Venezuela, peaceful, prosperous, not a socialist country, descends into socialist chaos within just a few years. So what happened to Venezuela?
What happened to Venezuela was that socialism, it was the most prosperous country in Latin America. And then socialism, as you said, completely destroyed it. So people went to seek opportunities elsewhere. We've had mass migration. I think like 30% of Venezuelans have actually left their home, not because we wanted to, but because we had to, either because the government was actively oppressing us or taking away our businesses or incarcerating us or just seeking opportunities elsewhere. And that's what happens when you put in policies like price controls, and when you nationalize private industries, and when you don't let the free market do its thing, you get mass migration and people leaving that country for more capitalist countries where there are actual opportunities at play.
What happened to your currency? What happened to the spending power of the people of Venezuela?
Well, we had a hyperinflation. That people that were high middle class suddenly became poor. Socialism is great with equality, making people equally as poor. All of people's properties, like the prices plummeted. So if you had all your money saved up in a specific property or even in the bank, now you didn't have anything anymore. So people that were well off before, businesses that were well off, everything just completely crumbled.
We saw a lot of media reports from people saying, no. What happened in Venezuela during this past election was it was a free and fair election. It was totally free, totally fair. Nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing to see here. Stop with your propaganda. So what do you say to those people who say that what happened in Venezuela in election last month was free and fair and everything was above board?
They're clearly living in an alternate reality. The Maduro regime never even showed the actual results. They just set the results. And when countries ask for proof, they failed to provide any proof. They actually said that Elon Musk hacked the voting system and they couldn't get the proof because there was like a crazy hack. People in Venezuela, they just feed them lies constantly. And if you're an outsider actually believing these lies that the regime feeds its people, then you're living in a completely alternate reality.
Now, you in the United States, you're seeing, of course, huge shades of socialism already unfolding. We're seeing this with the biopharmaceutical complex. the reason I invited you on, I mean, we're big fans of Black Forest Supplements, your company here on the show, and what it's done for our audience. You are in a battle right now. I think it's safe to call it a battle with the United States government against the Food and Drug Administration over the corrupt FDA, which we've highlighted many of the corrupt moves by the FDA here on this show. But can you talk about what you guys are battling right now against the FDA?
And what happened here was that there's this guy at Harvard, head of the longevity lab, called Dr. David Sinclair. He started studying this very powerful compound called NMN. He started first with mice, and he realized he did identical twins. If you could pull up a picture of that study, it would be great, because one mouse is young, athletic, skinny, while the other one was old, white hair, fat, could barely walk. And once he started seeing the power of these compounds, he started studying it on humans as well. And what we realized was that NAD+, which is something that's essential for the energy in our cells, declines as we age. And NMN is an NAD+ precursor. So once you take NAD+, once you take NMN, it becomes NAD+ in the blood. And if we keep our NAD plus levels high, our cells regenerate better, we age more gracefully, and simply we could live a better quality of life. And then once Dr. David Sinclair found the power behind this compound, he created a company called Metro Biotech, a big pharmaceutical company. And now what they're trying to do is to call it MIB626, and they want to monopolize NMN, put it behind a big pharma paywall. So now you can't buy NMN supplements. You need to go to your doctor, get a prescription. They're the only ones that can manufacture it. They could ramp up the prices. And now you're completely dependent on your insurance to get things like NMN. And what would happen is that if we lose this battle, okay, today it's NMN, but what's it going to be tomorrow? It could be vitamin D. It could be melatonin. Any natural product that one likes and one cherishes and has a big enough market, they'll just monopolize it, take away the free market, ramp up the prices, and now you have to go to your doctor, get a prescription to get this.
I mean, it's amazing to me that the FDA, of course, would partner with these big pharma. It's not shocking at all, but the FDA would partner with these biopharmaceutical companies that are, of course, they're in collusion with, making billions of dollars together. It's a, you know, back and forth. Many of these people who work at big pharmaceutical companies end up working at the FDA. I mean, it's like a revolving door, right? They just like, they work at these big pharmaceutical companies, whether it's Pfizer, Moderna, whatever, and they end up working at the FDA. So they're all in collusion with each other. And you have these natural remedies that are out there, like that you guys have. We've talked to other guests here on the show with the same thing, where they have different natural sources, supplements, and the government wants to come in and try to keep it out of the hands of the American people in order to make money for the biopharmaceutical complex. It's tyrannical in many ways.
No, for sure. There's definitely a revolving door, as you said. There was a study that they did where they tracked from like 2000 to 2010 through LinkedIn and PubMed. They tracked the people that were regulating the drugs at the FDA. And what they realized was that 56% of these people then went on to be consultants to big pharmaceutical companies. So the revolving door is there, and it's something that's simply very dangerous. The big pharmaceutical companies that they're supposed to regulate, they're in bed with. So who can we really trust here?
Now, we've talked about MNN on the show before, and I mean, it looks like they may try to stop you guys from selling it. The FDA may try to step in and do what they can. So you guys are in this battle. Where is that battle right now? Do you think you guys are going to be victorious? What's going to happen to like one of your flagship products?
Well, we partnered up with the Natural Products Association. There's a lot of us that sell NMN that back this association. And just as of, I think it was 7 days ago, the NPA sued the FDA regarding NMN. And I think that this battle is crucial because, as I said, if this happens, it would be the first ever prescription anti-aging drug. And it would be the first the first time that they actually achieve what they've been wanting to achieve for so long. Take something that's found in nature, something that's already been sold as a supplement for tens of years, and turn it into a pharmaceutical drug. Now they don't have to waste $1 billion to develop a new drug. They simply steal what's already working from the natural product, from the natural products that are out there. So that's the dangers of this.
Yeah, it's incredibly dangerous. And Americans have a right to get their hands on this. Americans have a right to not have to go behind this massive paywall from the biopharmaceutical complex to get access to this stuff. I mean, they want to keep Americans sick in this perpetual state of eating processed food, and then the biopharmaceutical complex comes in and provides the curative, the answer, with their drugs and their medications, and they're keeping away these natural benefits, keeping it out of the hands of Americans. I mean, it sounds like something you would hear like in Venezuela, right? I mean, am I wrong about that?
No, you're definitely not wrong, Clayton. And what I encourage people to do is to back companies, to sort of vote with their dollars, to back companies that they believe in, back companies that have their interests at heart, back companies that are fighting the fight that they want to fight. And in that way, since thankfully we live in a free market, you can shape the world as you would like to see it. So I highly encourage people to back us in this fight, whether it be by spreading the word, by purchasing NMN. And I'm just here to let people know that this is happening, and we can't just sit idly by and let big pharmaceutical companies screw us again.
No, and you guys have been a great partner for us over the years here on Redacted. So, I mean, you support what we do here, which is free speech. And, you know, and so we'll put up a link here on the screen if anyone wants to support you guys. You guys have a buy two, get two free offer right now as well. Hopefully this will remain in place and the FDA won't win this battle. So we're pulling for you guys. We're going to put the link in the description as well if people want to try out MNN to see how beneficial it is to their lives, and support you guys. That's why I wanted to have you on here, because I can't stand when I see government doing this to these different companies, and it really infuriates me. I can run down a laundry list of American companies that are helping Americans that the government has tried to shut down over the past couple of years. It's infuriating. So Antonio, thank you so much. Anything more you want to say on that so people can try this out?
As I said before, if this wasn't revolutionary, they wouldn't be spending hundreds of millions of dollars to try and monopolize the market. So try for yourselves this buy two, get two free deal. We're not making a lot of money there, but we just want to get it in the hands of the people so that when it comes to the courts, we have enough people backing our case. So it's harder for them to do things like this. So I'm sure that you guys will love it. I'm a big proponent of NMN, obviously, take it every day. I'm sure people from the show have already tried it. If they can comment, that would be great. And Clayton, thank you for having me here. And thank you for letting me tell the truth about what's going on with the natural products industry.
My pleasure. And also for warning us about what is coming to the United States of America in the form of socialism if we don't stop it right now. Antonio, great to see you. Thank you so much. Good luck in your battle against the FDA. We're pulling for you. And please keep us updated.
Clayton, thank you for having me on the show, and thank you guys for being here as well, spreading the good word.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And there's a bunch of people in the chat saying taurine and MNM have changed my life. Trending in World Today says that. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like that when you have the FDA going after, there's been a number of interviews we've had here on the show, the mm-hmm. FDA going after the natural industry because yeah. they are absolutely terrified and they are worried that this the FDA is trying to take away and trying to push more the biopharmaceutical complex. Like Tucker Carlson had an interview with Dr. Nels, I think a number of months ago, talking about the biopharmaceutical complex and how they've purposely pushed these things away so that they can make billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, deeply, deeply troubling. And by the way, we did have Anna on the show, Anna Parampil, to talk about the color revolution and what the United States has done in Venezuela. So, you know, love to hear all sides of a story, you know, from Venezuelans. We have a bunch of Venezuelans here in the chat saying we got out of Venezuela 5 years ago, because of what was happening in that country, the violence there, and now they're seeing the same thing here in the United States. So what, you know, the United States sanctions in Venezuela, the involvement in Venezuela, and then, of course, the pushing of this violence that's now unfolded into the United States of America. So deeply, deeply troubling. All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to look at the 9/11, the truth of the 9/11 attacks. We're kicking off a week-long look at the 9/11 attacks, and we're going to dive deep into all the different angles from the hijacking part of the story to where were the air defense systems on that day. We're also going to be looking at, of course, how these alleged Muslim hijackers who had no flight experience whatsoever somehow managed to pull off maneuvers that even Top Gun pilots couldn't pull off. We're going to get there in a second.
We are.
But first, if you suffer from daily pain, I need you to listen to our next message from our friends over at GDR Labs. Clint Winters is the renowned health expert featured in the national media. He's unveiled a natural pain reliever that is free of drugs, 100% drug-free, and a way to get full-body pain relief without any dangerous pills. I'm sure the FDA is going to love him as well. It's called Canolidine. As you read this, Canolidine has become the go-to pain reliever for over 1 million Americans, hundreds of professional athletes. It's so powerful, it was even named the official pain reliever of the UFC. That's right. No drugs, no documented side effects after 14 years of extensive testing. Again, Canolidine is the absolute future of pain relief. So whatever you do, make sure to click on the link below. Check out Clint's amazingly informative report on how Canolidine is changing lives by providing safe and powerful pain relief at 1/10 the cost of pain pills. That's why, of course, biopharmaceutical complex doesn't like these guys. So try it right now and see for yourself. Go to trycano.com/redacted, the 100% drug-free Canolidine. Go to trycano.com/redacted.
Well, elections in Germany showed a move to the center, but the press is calling this right-wing anti-immigration wins. Come on. These are people who want rule of law and a slow and reasonable immigration policy. That's not what they have in Germany right now. We've been talking about this. Well, I spoke to Ralf Schollheimer about this because last week the right wing was allegedly winning until an overnight recount and software, it was some kind of shenanigans happened, and the right wing did not come out on top. We're not allowed to form a majority government, but they did have massive results at the poll. So we talked to Ralf Schollheimer about this just a few days ago. He's a political analyst who specializes in European politics and the host of Hammer Time on YouTube. Here's what he had to say about this. All right, Ralf, tell us about the recent German elections and this idea that the far right anti-immigration party may have won, but not won.
So it's quite interesting. We live now in times where you in the United States and I in Austria, we talk about local elections in Germany. This shows kind of how globalized politics really has become. But it truly is interesting because in many ways it's a bellwether. So technically it was not just the Alternative for Germany, the right wing or hard right, if you want to call it, party that won, but also a new left wing party, the Allianz Sarah Wagenknecht. And I think what is very intriguing here is we very often talk about this in terms of left and right. And I think these terms are still useful, but here I think it's more useful to talk about establishment and anti-establishment, because it's very odd, right? The two parties that had the highest increase in their voting share was a party supposedly from the left and a party supposedly from the right. So that seems a little bit weird, because there are right-wing and left-wing parties that already exist. But what distinguishes those two from all the other parties is they take a different position on the war in Ukraine, they take a different position on what you just mentioned on migration, they take a different position on all kinds of cultural issues like transgenderism in the way it's also happening in the United States. And I think what we currently see developing, not just in Germany, but all over the West since 2016, is not so much the emergence of populist parties. I mean, Bill Clinton was a populist. Everybody wants to be a populist. But I think what we truly see emerging are anti-establishment parties. And I believe that this is also, if we look back to 2016, what made Donald Trump so interesting. Because let's be honest, by no measure is he a conservative. He's not a Republican in the traditional sense. I think what made Trump interesting was the fact that he was an alternative to the established elites, if you want. And here comes, I think, the most important thing. Whether it's the AfD or the Allianz Sarah Wagenknecht in Germany or Le Pen in France or Trump in the United States, and this might sound a little bit provocative, but I actually mean it quite sincerely. I think that this is actually the strongest lifespan of a democracy that we can have. And what I mean by this is the nature of democracy is that people can vote out the establishment, that they can vote out the elite that is in power and give somebody else a chance. We do not live in a hereditary system, right? This is not the 19th century or the 18th century where you have certain families that just pass on power from generation to generation to generation. I mean, this was the case until 2016. Just remember, originally the idea was, both by Republicans and Democrats, that Hillary Clinton, the wife of a former president, is supposed to run against Jeb Bush, the son and brother of a former president. I mean, this is more like a monarchy with changing teams, changing houses, but it's not a democracy. Trump is in many ways, and I know this sounds a little bit provocative, but I know that you and your viewers understand this intuitively very well. He's actually a reaffirmation of the democratic spirit in America, just as I think that these anti-establishment parties in Europe are a reaffirmation of democracy in Europe. And the claim that the establishment parties have that they want to defend democracy, they want to defend what they believe as their entitlement to rule. But nobody in a democracy is entitled to rule. You have to earn it. And I think these new parties, these new movements are earning it, and the old parties have lost that privilege. Therefore, they have to go.
So last time we spoke about Ursula von der Leyen and how Europeans don't get a vote on her. She is an entrenched establishment candidate. Candidate is not even the right word. She's a leader. She's a globalist. She's a ruler. She's a dictator. I could go on and on. But where they do have a vote, we see this growing, what I want to call a centrist movement. It's just, hey, if we have borders, we have a country. Let's enforce them. Hey, let's not put our kids on puberty blockers without a conversation about it. And so what is this, what's called right wing, but you and I might agree is centrist, that's growing? And who is it that's clinging to power that may not allow it?
Well, I always describe when we talk, and I use the term just myself, when we talk about the elites and we talk about the establishment, okay, these are not just empty terms, because I think what you and I do differently from many other commentators is we don't just want to use platitudes, we actually want to fill those words and phrases with content. So I would define them as they want to maintain at all costs the status quo, right? They are like the Angela Merkels that say there is no alternative to the policies that we suggest. There is no alternative to the direction which we want to go. Whereas, as you correctly point out, these new parties, and you're correct, they are in many ways centrist. They sound very often like conservatives out of the 1980s. What they want, they say, no, an alternative path must be possible. I always, again, I don't want to talk too much about Trump, but he embodies it so nicely because he does it more on an intuitive level than a conscious level. And there was this conversation, again, in 2017, 2018, when they said, well, we cannot defeat ISIS, right? ISIS cannot be defeated. And he said, what are you talking about? We have the largest military in the world. Give me a break. It can be done. And it could be done. And I think this is what gives these new movements a right to have a shot at power. Now, going back to your question and your comment about Ursula von der Leyen, of course, what's now going on is that these established powers, they, of course, also control the institutions because they have been in charge of them now for decades. But it's not just the political institutions. It's not just the European Union, which is a special case because the European Union was designed to prevent any kind of significant change. But even in the United States, even in media and academia, right, everybody clings to the status quo and they mobilize what they can against anybody who wants to change the status quo. Look at what's happening to Elon Musk. Whatever you think about Elon Musk, right, there's a lot to talk about, good things, bad things, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, but that they ban Twitter in Brazil, that they want to crack down on it in Europe, and they want to ban Telegram, or at least arrest the founder of Telegram in Europe. That when Kamala Harris in a recent interview said that Musk has lost the privilege, whatever kind of privilege she was talking about, and that they cannot speak, and I quote, to millions of people without being controlled, without being regulated. This is the attempt of the ancien regime, to use a term from the French Revolution, to defend itself against a wave of people that want change. This is the thing. Nobody wants to abolish, I really want to stress this, nobody wants to abolish democracy. People want to use their democratic right, the kind of the essence of democracy, to put new people in charge. And just a quick final note on this from Germany. Voter participation increased. So more people, about 10% more people went to the votes this time than during the last elections in the same region. I mean, that's a reaffirmation. People that never thought about going to elections go to elections. And again, to make the parallel for you American viewers to Trump, that is also what happened partially in 2016. Right? Democrats stayed at home for several reasons, but many people that never went to a vote to an election in the first place went because they said, wait a moment, this guy actually speaks to me. And I think this is a reaffirmation of democracy.
So what happened then when it seemed like this centrist, or what they call right-wing party, seemed to win, and then the next day they said, oh, actually there was a miscount, so they were not allowed to form a majority government. What will happen now? Does it feel like there is this establishment that's clinging to power? And what next?
Well, I can give you a good example of this. There was this absolutely insane article by an establishment newspaper that said, well, it is true that the AfD was the strongest party with 33%, and that the socialists and the Greens barely got 11% together. But these 11% are democratic voters, whereas these 33% are undemocratic voters. So this is going to be the new twist. So no matter, as you say, right, so no matter how many votes these new parties are going to get, they will say, yeah, but your vote, it's so ironic. Remember, there's often the debate in the United States when during times of slavery, African-Americans were counted, I think it was like 3/5 of a person for different historical reasons. But apparently this is now the attempt to do the same with the new right, or these new parties in Europe, right? They say, sure, you got 33% of the vote, but your voters are of less value than the voters who vote for the Greens or vote for the socialists. So it is so obvious now that those who talk about defending democracy are the biggest threat to democracy. And I think this needs to be stressed again and again and again, because they don't want to defend democracy. They want to defend their entrenched positions. They want to defend what they believe is their entitlement to rule. And they want to defend the status quo. This has nothing to do with democracy, but it's all about power.
Well, you're presenting us with a real glass half empty, glass half full take on this. So I guess it's up to us which one we want to take, because you can see it as a shattering of the establishment, and you can also see it as the establishment desperately clinging to power and pressing down the populist voice.
Can I say one more thing? Because reason why I'm so glad that I can speak to you, because the attempt I think a majority by now has the same sentiment that we have. But very often, and I think this is very much the thing that you do and Redacted, that I try to do as well, right? It is the obligation of commentators like us to kind of speak for those who very often lack the words, because they have more difficult or different things to do and cannot engage in politics all the time. So we kind of
have real jobs.
Exactly, they have real jobs. Exactly. Right. So we have an obligation towards them. And kind of the message I have for all those people is that they will try to blackmail you, right? Because this is the attempt. You then, as I just said in Germany, right, they will say, if you vote for Trump, if you vote for Le Pen, if you vote for Farage, then you are, you know, an enemy of democracy. Then feel bad. You must feel bad. I mean, look at what the Democrats are doing. This is, their entire campaign is about feelings, about vibe. Now, that works two ways. They want to create the quote-unquote positive vibe for themselves and the negative one for the other side. And I could just say, don't fall for it. Voting for the party that wants within the system, and all of these parties want to do it within the system, nobody from Trump to Farage to the AfD calls for an overthrow of democracy. They want to be in charge through democratic means, which is absolutely okay. And voting for these people, voting for these new movements, is an affirmation. It's the most, at the moment, the most democratic thing you can do. Because over the last 30 years, those in power have lost their right to rule, because let's be honest, they were disappointing, and in many ways they failed. They can now be voted out of office, they can regroup, they can reflect upon their failures. There are going to be elections in 4 years, in 5 years, and then they come back, you know, if they found their ways again. But the idea that there are only certain movements, only certain opinions, only certain media outlets that have the right to speak and to disseminate their information, and all alternative viewpoints must be suppressed or banned, is very, very dangerous. So when in doubt, side with those whom the majority wants to ban.
Yeah. Well, thank you for this analysis. You can find more of Ralph's great analysis on his show, Hammer Time. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on Redacted.
Thanks for having me, Natalie.
All right. So are you glass half full or glass half empty? Let me know, because Ralph there was half full. I'm half empty. Go ahead.
I just loved the undemocratic voting. people that voted the wrong way are undemocratic. I was like, that's funny.
Right. They don't count as a whole person. It's wild right now. Also, I want to apologize. My microphone had some technical issues that day. So I know that didn't sound awesome, but Ralph did. So he's the one who had things to say there, not me. I just asked the questions around here. Right, Mr. Morris?
That's right.
All right.
We got more news to get to here on, but we got a lot of great chats today. Thank you guys. Vince Staples, because we're talking about 9/11 here in a minute. We're not going to talk about, Vince is asking, you know, if you guys cover 9/11, pray you talk about the urban moving systems. We're not going to talk about that today, or the dancing Israelis. We've covered that in other segments. What we're going to look at today is really around the planes themselves, and looking at how, or the big lies about the actual hijacking, sort of the fake hijacking. We'll talk about that coming up in here minutes on the show.
But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital, because we are, of course, expecting the Fed to cut interest rates in just a matter of days. When that happens, it will devalue the U.S. dollar, leading to more inflation. That's what most economists tell us. That's why we talk a lot about gold on this show and silver as a fantastic investment. It doesn't get a lot of sexy news coverage because it's a performing asset. Instead, they want you to use your money to invest in the stock market and partner up with the U.S. government. Well, you could do that if you want to, or you could learn how to have actual performing assets and wealth management with precious metals. And our friends over at Lear Capital will teach you how to do this. And in fact, if you go to LearRedacted.com, what they can do is send you a free guide to teach you the value of metals investing. They also can teach you the different types of metals that you can invest in for whatever suits your appetite for either risk or reward, whatever it is. It's just something that you and your family need to sit down and learn, because the Fed, obviously, and the government that we've got right now is making the economy unstable and unpredictable for their own greed. So go to LearRedacted.com, or you can call them at 1-800-613-3557 for your free guide. And you can have a conversation with someone. They will pick up the phone and say, what do you need to learn? What is your situation? It is really truly personalized advice. So go to LearRedacted.com or give them a call, 1-800-613-3557.
Well, we are kicking off our week-long look at the truth behind the 9/11 terror attacks. Everything, of course, we've been told about that day was an orchestrated lie. Every day this week, we're going to have an in-depth interview here on the show on a different part of the 9/11 cover-up. And today we're kicking it off with Ted Walter. He's the executive director of International Center for 9/11 Justice, and he just led a big symposium over the weekend with his presentation called The 9/11 Hijacking Myth Exposed, and Ted joins me now. Ted, great to have you here.
Great to be here, Clayton. Always good to see you.
And great to see you, and great for all of the work that you've been able to do to put together this big symposium with all of these different speakers to shed the truth, the light on the truth about all of this. So we're starting with the hijacking. But before we get to the hijacking specifically, because you said in your presentation that that is where everything flows. Everything flows from the hijacking part of the story, right? So, and then all of the other pieces come from that. We'll get to that in a second. But first, for someone who's totally believes the narrative of 9/11, who's never been exposed to all of the pieces of truth that you've exposed over the years, can you sort of just give us an umbrella understanding of what are some of the main big lies told on that day?
Absolutely. So I like to boil down the events of the day of 9/11 to basically four key events or four claims that are in the official story. The first is that these four planes were hijacked by 19 young Muslims. The second is that those hijackers somehow managed to fly the planes, navigate them, and fly them all the way to their targets, or at least in three out of the four cases. So you have the flying of the planes. The third is that the U.S. air defense system completely failed to stop these planes from reaching their targets, failed to intercept the planes after they were hijacked. And the fourth claim is then that three skyscrapers in Manhattan collapsed because two planes hit two of those skyscrapers. So those are like the four main events that we're talking about. And I would say over the last 20 years, a lot of focus has been put on, you know, why did the air defenses fail? You know, what was going on with FAA and what was going on with NORAD? And certainly a lot of focus has been put on the question of why did these buildings collapse? And, you know, both in the mainstream and in the, you know, sort of the alternative community of people questioning this story. Particularly the collapse of the buildings. And in my view, it's beyond any doubt established that the Twin Towers and Building 7, the third building that came down on 9/11, were brought down by controlled demolition. most likely explosives or nanothermite-based explosives that tore the structure apart and totally pulverized all the concrete. And there's just no way that the top of each building could crush the 90 stories of structure below it, even if it started to fall just a little bit. And certainly the heat from the fires was not enough to weaken the steel. And the building 7 just drops straight into its footprint. So that's really well established. And even people that are not involved in questioning these issues have probably heard that idea floating around. The two events that I described first, the hijacking of the planes and the flying of the planes, and our argument, which is that there's no way that the alleged hijackers could have actually successfully hijacked the planes and then flown them to their targets. It's less talked about. It's just kind of assumed that that just happened, right? So as an organization, the International Center for 9/11 Justice has decided to put a lot of focus on those first three steps of the story, because we feel like the demolition of the buildings is already really well established. And so for this symposium, we were basically presenting research that we've done over the past year. And my focus was on how plausible is the story of these hijackings, and do we have any real evidence supporting them? Because when you start to dig into it, all the evidence for the hijacking story entirely come from the phone calls that were made or that were purportedly made from the four aircraft by several of the passengers and flight attendants. And so I can dive into that.
Yeah, let's get to the phone calls in a second. You say that everything starts with the hijacking piece of the story, and you're absolutely right. We've covered extensively here on the show about the buildings. I encourage our viewers to go and see those interviews about the buildings, the controlled demolition of that. That has been a huge part of the story. Most people have been focusing on that. But you're right. I think the hijacking piece of it is arguably more important, because that is the theatrics that were used that day to get us all scared, right? That's changed air travel forever, and we have to take off our shoes. We go through massive screening processes now as a result of all of this, right? The total control and scanning of our faces using biometric data, all of these things stem from the idea that these planes were hijacked. So let's get there first. You believe that, first of all, these planes were not hijacked. They were controlled. So talk about that, and then I want to play some of the audio clips. You can toss to them, play them however you want, because and tell us what we're hearing.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, there's the plausibility question. Is it plausible that hijackers could really hijack all these planes? And when you look through history, there's only a handful of cases where hijackers have actually tried to remove pilots from the aircraft. And in all these cases, from the controls of the aircraft, and in all of these cases, they're unsuccessful, and it's a really chaotic situation. You know, the fights ensue, passengers and flight attendants get involved. Sometimes the pilots do manage to contact air traffic control. And it's a messy, chaotic, scary situation that usually results in the hijackers not actually getting control of the planes. And on top of that, we know that these hijackers, these alleged hijackers, the so-called muscle hijackers, were all quite small. They're all under the height of 5'7 or 5'8. They all weigh, you know, under 135 pounds or so. And yet, and then we have these pilots on the plane who are all, 6 out of 8 of the pilots are military trained. They flew in the Air Force and the Marines, et cetera. And then you've got a lot of people on the plane who are also really strong or well trained, who, what happens in these types of situations is that the passengers tend to get involved in stopping the hijacking from happening. So none of that actually happened in these four alleged hijacking incidents. It was almost a seamless event. The situation on these planes was suddenly they were just hijacked. There was no indications externally that the plane was hijacked. The one plane where there was some purported indication of a hijacking was Flight 93, where at 9:28 a.m. In the morning, there were two radio transmissions that came from the cockpit that purported to convey the sounds of a struggle going on in the cockpit. And in both of those transmissions, the pilot said, "Mayday, mayday." And so I offered those for you to play for your audience.
Yeah, let's listen to them right now.
We'll just put them in back direct St. Louis, and they can put in whatever they want, just so we can get them off that.
Marine.
Please, Tom. That's American 1060.
Yeah, what are we hearing here, though?
Yeah, so first of all, it's very odd that in both of these transmissions, the pilot says, "Mayday, mayday," and doesn't give any more specific information like there's a hijacking or somebody's trying to pull me out of the cockpit or anything. It just says, "Mayday, mayday," right? And if you really listen closely to the second one, and maybe you want to play that one again to get a really close listen, the exact you hear the exact same set of words and sounds and the same rhythm repeat twice. It just like, mayday.
Sounds like a loop.
It sounds like a loop. Mayday, get out of here. Now, I don't think it's like verbatim the exact same sound waves, but it's basically a loop.
Let's listen to that one again. Yeah, let's listen to that one again.
That's American 1060.
Yeah, it does. And when you hear it for the first time, it does sound fabricated. But of course, you know, our brains could be playing any sort of tricks on us. But so these recordings you maintain are fabricated, and then all of the sort of narrative flows from these recordings, right?
Right. So I wouldn't hang my hat right now and say 100% these are fabricated, although I strongly suspect it. But the even more important thing about these transmissions is that the official story has now committed itself to there being about a minute long or more violent struggle in or near the cockpit of the airplane, like very loud pilots screaming for their lives, trying to get the hijackers away, et cetera. And so everybody on flight 93, which was a Boeing 757-200, you know, it's a jet, but it's not a terribly large plane. And a lot of the people who ended up making phone calls were sitting in first class or sitting near the front of the cabin of coach class, like would have heard or, you know, what was going on. Like there's just no way that would have just stayed contained in the cockpit, right? And so about a minute and a half later, you start getting phone calls supposedly coming from the flight where passengers are reporting what's going on. And lo and behold, and this is for all four planes, not just flight 93, but flight 93, it's the most obvious because we have these radio transmissions. There's nobody reports the actual cockpit entry, how the hijackers got into the cockpit. Nobody reports how the hijackers defeated the pilots physically. Nobody reports where the pilots are now, what happened to them. There's only two very vague references to what happened to the pilots across the four flights of all the calls. And we're talking about 28 phone calls made by about 19 passengers and flight attendants across the four flights, most of them on flight 93, 12 of them on flight 93. So that gives us the biggest window into this sort of false story. And as you go on, these phone calls are made over the next sort of 20 to 30 minutes, and none of them are consistent. And the biggest one that stands out is the biggest few that stand out are passengers reporting the cockpit invasion happening at that time when they're on the phone. So they're like, so it would be like 15 minutes later and you have a passenger, Jeremy Glick or Todd Beamer, reporting to the person that they're talking to, yeah, they're getting ready to hijack the plane right now. Okay, yeah, they're going into the cockpit right now and they're taking the pilots out or whatever. So Todd Beamer, the famous passenger, because he said, he's reported to have said, "Let's roll," when the passengers on flight 93 supposedly try to take back the plane. He's the one who said, you know, like, oh, they're entering the cockpit now. And the person who reported that was very specific that she was on the phone with him for 7 minutes before he reported that. So you've got this story that's coming from the calls that just doesn't add up with the idea that the flight was actually taken over at 9:28 and started to change its course. You've also got, I could go on and on, but you've got totally inconsistent reports, contradictory reports of the violence that's taking place on the planes. So one person describes a passenger being stabbed and killed, and he's sitting next to all these other people, none of whom talk about a passenger being stabbed and killed. They're talking about completely different things. So all of these calls, and I think people have rightly been skeptical of the calls for years, and a small handful of researchers have really delved into them. But we're really trying to bring this out into the light now and say, none of these calls make what they're actually reporting these calls. Put aside the technology question, how are the calls were made? What is reported in the calls makes no sense, does not add up whatsoever with the official story. You also have to switch to flight 11. You've got a totally, totally crazy, unrealistic situation described on the plane where supposedly there has been two stabbings of flight attendants and a person stabbed in the neck and who's bleeding out and basically dying. And there's been mace released on the plane. all the passengers in first class and business class have come back to coach because there's mace in the front of the plane. And yet supposedly, according to flight attendant Betty Ong, none of the passengers and coach know that there is a hijacking going on in the plane. They're supposedly under the impression that there's just a medical emergency. Well, if all of these passengers in first class and coach actually saw this violence happen and they saw the cockpit be invaded, they would start telling the people around them, right? So how is that? And one last piece of it to tell you is, you know, then they talk, the Betty Ong talks about her flight attendant colleagues trying to get into the cockpit. And there's the idea that you get is that there's nobody in first class or business class, no hijackers trying to stop them. So essentially, where are the pilots and where are the hijackers? Are they all just locked in the cockpit together? You've got five hijackers and two pilots in the cockpit together. It becomes cartoonish, right? So nothing adds up when you really start to delve into what is being reported in these phone calls. And I think the kicker for a lot of people is that the majority of the people who made these phone calls were reported by their loved ones or by the people that spoke to them from the ground have been extremely calm when they were on the phone. Like they were not actually involved in an emergency situation. Just extraordinarily, some of the terms used, shockingly calm, extraordinarily calm, you know, and to the point where some of the people that received the calls didn't believe that the person was actually in a real hijacking, at least initially. So
it's unbelievable, that part of the story. Then, of course, we have, which we're going to dive more deeply into here in just a short while, with a special report that we have on the remote controlling of the aircraft. So if you understand that sort of narrative that's being pushed out here, then you understand how the evidence seems to support that these aircraft were remotely controlled. Because as you point out, you're having a struggle, you're fighting with people, and you're also descending at 10,000 feet per second or per minute, and doing a controlled turn into a tower with very little flight experience at all. Like you're literally, these guys are like the worst pilots in the world. They have zero to almost negative flight experience. They're so bad. And they're pulling off maneuvers that not even Maverick could pull off in Top Gun, right? So that part of the story just is laughable once you start diving into it, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think both pieces of this, that they could have hijacked the planes, you know, and then somehow even just figured out where to turn, you know, like as soon as they get control of the plane, how are they like to turn the plane and to like get your bearings? And to do that in a situation where you've probably covered in blood, you've got like, you know, 200 right. pounds like covered in blood that you've just pulled out of the cockpit. Like it's just that aspect of it, the stress aspect of it is also very implausible. But yeah, they wouldn't have been able to get the planes all the way there. And then the final maneuvers to actually hit the targets, hitting the towers and hitting the Pentagon are just, you know, it's fairy tale stuff that even inexperienced pilots or really any pilots could maneuver the planes in that way.
Well, I want to thank you, Ted, for everything that you've been doing, your organization, organizing this symposium, bringing all these incredible speakers together. And for our show, I really want to thank you because we're kicking off our week-long look at 9/11, multiple stories, but we thought we'd have you on first to kind of kick everything off here because this is going to be a big week, hopefully shattering a lot of lies, a lot of propaganda during this week-long event here on Redacted. So we thank you so much, Ted, for all of your work.
Thank you, Clayton. Thanks for all your work.
And thanks to all of you for being a part of our show here. So as I just mentioned with Ted, we are going to now, I want all of you to stay tuned because we're about to launch a premiere of my interview with Captain Dan Hanley. And Captain Dan Hanley is going to dive more deeply into veteran pilot on exactly how he believed these aircraft were remotely controlled and how he, even as an experienced pilot, says that these maneuvers are impossible for many of the pilots that he's spoken to. So I want all of you now to stick around because we're about to launch this premiere. And what will happen if you're watching us here on YouTube is that when this live stream ends in just a few seconds here, that you will be redirected to the live premiere of our interview with Captain Dan Hanley, specifically on the hijackings and the aircraft and how they were arguably remote controlled that day. So stick around. Please watch this next interview here. Thank you guys so much for continuing to subscribe to us and being a part of our great community. Now watch this interview and this premiere for our week-long special on 9/11.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.